And welcome back. Since 2012, St. Louis Public Radio's Politically Speaking podcast has featured some of the top names in Missouri politics. The most recent installment with reporters Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum is with embattled Missouri Republican Party Chairman John Hancock, who was accused of starting an anti-Semitic whispering campaign that led to the suicide of state auditor and gubernatorial candidate Tom Schweik. The whispering campaign has not been proven, and police have said they have found no evidence of one. First, here's Joe Manis setting up the background in the days leading up to Schweik's suicide.
Most reporters hadn't really heard anything about the alleged whispering campaign having to do with whether or not he was Jewish. I'm simplifying it.
Yeah.
Schweik was not Jewish. He was Episcopalian. His father and grandfather were Jewish. This had not been mentioned. I had not heard that much. What I had heard was that Schweik had not been happy with you because you had been doing work for Catherine Hanaway, who was the other major Republican candidate who'd announced for governor. Now, you had announced at the committee meeting right before you were elected, you promised that you wouldn't work for any Missouri candidates, do any consulting work. In primaries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right after that, there was an election for vice chairman, and Schweik's chief of staff, Trish Vincent, lost. Okay. A few minutes later, there is a straw poll of the 68 executive committee members, and Schweik also loses. Hanaway wins. Okay. So then you fast forward a few days. There began to be rumors like 48 hours later, late Monday night. In fact, I talked to you that Schweik was going to be talking about this alleged whispering campaign. He was supposed to have a news conference on Tuesday. This was would have been the 24th.
Yep.
It didn't happen. You sent your wife to Jeff City in case it did.
Right. My wife and I both went.
Yeah. Danforth has said, this is former Senator John Danforth, who I also covered for a long time, who is Schweik's mentor, had talked to him Tuesday night and talked him out of it, saying, you know, that he thought the better way was to talk to some reporters privately about this. Okay, so then Thursday morning, Vincent calls Danforth's office. She's concerned about Schweik's state of mind. Danforth's chief assistant, Martha Fitz, gets Schweik and his wife on the phone. She's on the phone with Schweik. Then he gets off. His wife's on the phone, and he shoots himself. And right before he died, he was talking about this alleged whispering campaign. I'm putting this in context so people understand where all this is coming from.
So now that we're in context, you have strenuously denied that you were involved in any anti-Semitic, bigoted campaign against Tom Schweik. Is that correct?
That is correct.
In fact, I'm going to read you an exact quote that you put out right afterward.
Okay.
You said, and this is from the Casey Star, John Hancock said that he mistakenly believed that Schweik was Jewish, quote, but it was simply a part of what I believed to be his biography, no different than the fact that he was from St. Louis and had graduated from Harvard Law School. That is what you said. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did you come to the mistaken conclusion that Schweik was Jewish?
You know, I've given that some thought. Stupidity. I just assumed that he was Jewish.
Was it because of his name?
Yeah, was it because his last name sounded Jewish?
I don't know. It's stupid. It's sometimes you think you know something, you know. I don't know why I would have thought that, but I did.
Here's why I asked that question. There have been three Jewish people who have been elected to statewide office: Kenneth Rothman, Harriet Woods, and Jason Kander.
Yeah.
All three of them are Democrats. I would imagine, since you're in opposition research, that if a Republican who was Jewish had been elected to statewide office, it probably would have been noted by the press almost immediately because it would have been a first. It would have been the same thing if an African-American had won statewide office. It would have been let's go back to Margaret Kelly, for example. It was the first time a woman became in statewide office.
Right.
So it just seems like that would have been a widely known fact if he was Jewish, especially to somebody who is in opposition research. Is that a fair assessment to do?
I suppose. I just don't think somebody's religion is that big of a deal. I mean, I don't. It's not something that I consider. I don't ask my clients what the religion they are. I just don't. It's just not a big deal to me. And the fact that I thought Tom was Jewish, I would never have said that to somebody in a way that would be hurtful, because I don't consider that to be a negative thing at all.
Well, there was one person who did think it was hurtful, and that's former U.S. Senator John Danforth.
Right.
He didn't mention you by name in his homily, but he mentioned this quote-unquote whispering campaign, and we're going to start off with a clip from him right now.
Tom called this anti-Semitism, and of course it was. The only reason for going around saying that someone is Jewish is to make political profit from religious bigotry.
And apologies to our listeners for the echo. That was the best audio that we could get. But, I mean, you obviously have heard that before. What's kind of your response to Senator Danforth on that?
Well, if somebody's running around doing a whisper campaign, that is wrong. And there's no place for it in politics. And if you're running around, you know, denigrating somebody's religion, then that's wrong. So I don't disagree with Jack Danforth's assessment of right and wrong politics. I vehemently disagree with that. I'm an example of something that was wrong because there was no whisper campaign. And, you know, a whisper campaign would mean there would be dozens of people out there saying, yeah, Hancock was in and telling me Schweik was. It just didn't happen. There was no whisper campaign.
Now, what you had said to me, and I've printed this a couple times,
yeah,
was that in September when you were David Humphreys,
right,
who's a major donor from the Joplin area, that you and some other people were in a meeting and that it was in the context of discussing how religion might affect voter turnout.
Right.
And Hanaway is Catholic.
Yep.
And what you had told me was that it was discussing whether or not, you know, how much of the Catholic vote she could get or whether or not it was even relevant, whether or not her being Catholic would affect anything.
Right.
And so you're saying, you have said that any comment about Schweik was in the context of that broader discussion, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and that was in September.
Yeah, my I was working on a project called Missouri Catholic Vote. Do we have time to get into this?
Absolutely.
Go
okay.
ahead.
So it is, well, it's not my belief, it's a fact, that the largest identifiable demographic of ticket splitters, swing voters in Missouri is Catholic voters, identified Catholics. And they swing wildly. And one of the points that I was making in the context of this project that I was working on is that just the fact that a candidate is Catholic is no guarantee that they win the Catholic vote. And I would point to the Ed Martin, Chris Koster race for Attorney General in 2012, where
Martin, who's Catholic,
who, yeah, worked for the Archdiocese. I think he worked in the Vatican.
Yes,
at
he
one
did.
Point. And yet he lost the Catholic vote overwhelmingly to Chris Koster in that election. So I would be making a point that even though Catherine Hanaway is Catholic and Tom Schweik is Jewish, that's no guarantee that the Catholic vote is going to go in that direction. That would have been the kind of point I was making.
Yeah, and I guess in that situation, because and I'm not trying to be stereotypical here, but I think there's been polling that shows that American Jews tend to vote for the Democratic Party more than the Republican Party, you know, just because – and we're, again, you mistakenly thought that Tom Schweik
right.
was Jewish. I guess the point that you were making is just because he was Jewish doesn't mean that a lot of Jewish people would vote for him, probably because he was a Republican or something along that line.
Yeah, lines. And I just don't consider somebody's religious affiliation to be that big of a deal. I mean, I would never have gone around trying to discredit Tom Schweik by telling people he was Jewish. That wouldn't, you know,
well,
not
well,
something
I'm going to play
would.
Another clip from,
sure.
from Senator Danforth where he kind of explains why
right.
this might have been a hurtful situation.
When was the last time anyone sidled up to you and whispered into your ear that such and such a person is a Presbyterian? Tom told me of his Jewish grandfather who taught him about anti-Semitism and told him that any time Tom saw it, he had to confront it. So Tom believed that that was exactly what he must do.
Now, there have been a couple of articles that have come out since Tom Schweik's suicide,
yeah,
explaining how in Missouri, while there may not be rampant, latent anti-Semitism going along, and I mean, spoiler alert to our listeners, I'm a Jewish American, you can probably tell by my last name.
I wouldn't assume that.
I don't think you can assume that anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
I haven't experienced like a lot of blatant anti-Semitism living in Missouri for
yeah.
the last 10 years, but it did explain that, you know, since Missouri is an overwhelmingly either Protestant or Catholic state,
right.
It's kind of difficult sometimes for a Jewish candidate to break through. I mean, Kenneth Rothman ran for governor in 1984. It was a terrible Democratic year, and there were probably extenuating circumstances. But, I mean, I've heard from some people who knew Kenneth Rothman that said that his Judaism was somewhat of a liability in the rural areas. So I think that's what Senator Danforth was saying, that whether we like it or not, this type of thing exists among some people and some voters,
I'm sure it does, but it's not a – I don't think I know a single person that I'm an acquaintance with that I would consider anti-Semitic. I don't think I know anybody. And the Republican Party at its base is, at least in Missouri, is made up with a lot of evangelical Christians.
Correct.
And you're not going to find on the planet more passionately pro-Israel people than evangelical Christians, which form really the core and the base of the Republican grassroots out there. So they're just it just is not true that there's some widespread anti-Semitism strain flowing through the Republican Party. It's not there.
Well, and even and to be fair, back in 1984 when Rothman won, that was a huge Republican year. Ronald Reagan carried every state.
Again, there were extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, so I think sometimes in politics, and this is true of both parties sometimes, where they blame something, a huge loss, on some factor that actually there may have been
That was the main factor.
Right.
But it may have been one factor.
Correct. But you are correct, though, that people were blaming the fact that he was Jewish, saying that may have hurt him, when in fact it might not have mattered.
My home state representative district was Creve Coeur, Olivet, and Ladue. I had a large Jewish population in that district when I got elected twice to be its representative. And one of the things I explained to Jack Danforth last November is that if I were anti-Semitic, I've been active in politics for 30 years. I represented Creve Coeur, Olivet, and Ladue in the General Assembly. If I was an anti-Semite, somebody would have pointed that out by now.
And this may be more of a question for Jack Danforth or the other people who have opined on it. But, you know, I've noticed from an outside perspective, Joe has been writing most of the story, that a lot of people opining on what is anti-Semitic and what is not, you know, it's been a lot of non-Jewish people basically talking about this, including Senator Danforth.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that he has a degree in theology and he probably understands religion, but
he's
fact remains
minister.
He's not Jewish.
Right.
He doesn't understand the Jewish experience and he doesn't understand what perks people's mind what anti-Semitism is.
Right.
I mean, have you noticed that throughout this entire situation
This whole thing has been it's been a mess. And, you know, it started when the Post-Dispatch editorial page decided that Tom Schweik's off-the-record comments were newsworthy without verifying the accuracy of it. And if they would have done the good reporting work on the front end, there was no whisper campaign. The police have said it now. I've said it. There was no whisper campaign. And the Post-Dispatch essentially said it in their news department when they wrote the piece, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. So if they would have done that good work on the front end and tried to get a second source to verify any of these things, then none of this would have happened.
Why have you decided not to resign after the calls for resignation?
Because I didn't do anything wrong. And I want to do this job. 50 out of 68 people selected me to do this job. I spent 3 months campaigning for it. And I know I can do a good job for the Republican Party. And I didn't do anything to merit my resignation.
So I kind of want to move on a little bit.
Me too.
As I'm sure you do. Before Schweik's suicide, there was this ad, which I want to emphasize to both our guest and our listeners. John Hancock did not have anything to do with it. He was not responsible for it. But I'm playing it because it was kind of a sense of what the discourse was in the Republican Party.
Sure.
Like, very far out into the
now,
primaries.
This was done by a group that led by allies of Hanaway, but Catherine Hanaway also has denied any connection with this ad. I want to make sure.
So let's play a little bit of clip of that ad.
Tom Schweik, like him? No. Is he a weak candidate for governor? Absolutely. Just look at him. He could be easily confused for the deputy sheriff of Mayberry. But more importantly, He can be manipulated. That's why Senator Claire McCaskill and President Obama enlisted my help to meddle in another Republican primary with Schweik as our pawn.
Okay, so first of all, I just would like to say I'm not trying to opine here. I'm just using this as an analysis from looking at other ads. That ad is by no means the nastiest ad I've ever seen. If you looked in St. Louis County last year,
right,
Steve Stenger was literally, and I'm not even paraphrasing, literally said that he blamed victims of sex trafficking for their plight.
So I mean, he was accused of saying that.
Literally what happened in the ad, and that type of thing is far beyond what you just heard.
And what you just heard was a parody, and I think – If you're not familiar with House of Cards.
And that was not Kevin Spacey. It was somebody imitating Kevin Spacey.
And I don't watch House of Cards. I've never seen it. But if you've never seen House of Cards, and that ad hits you as pretty nasty.
Yeah.
But it's a parody of this character in House of
Cards.
But
that was what I was going to say next. Yeah. Because it has been held up as a showcase as how deep wrong the discourse in the state has gone. And that other example I gave with Stenger against Dooley could be another example. I mean, what does it say about the discourse in your party when candidates have to go against somebody's appearance and make a pretty far-flung accusation that Claire McCaskill is manipulating him because Schweik donated $500 in 2001, basically.
So I will tell you, I've got another example of this kind of thing. I did some work for Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, in his first campaign in 2010. And he was criticized. They were making fun of his appearance and that he was a geek and a nerd or whatever. And that was a narrative that his opponents were trying to shop around. And what Rick Snyder did was he embraced that and he created a pack called One Tough Nerd. And he went on television and said, yeah, I'm a nerd. I'm going to clean up Michigan politics. And he took that, what had been a slight against him, and he embraced it and used it for his benefit. And, you know, candidates, you can do that when somebody maybe goes too far against you. You know, look for a way to use that information.
Because when I first heard that ad, I actually heard it on the 21st.
Yeah.
My first reaction is this just shows – actually Schweik's strength as a candidate, because what they are attacking him on is very, very minuscule compared to what they might attack Hannaway on, considering she's voted on a bunch of things.
Right.
If you have to go so deep into the well to attack somebody's appearance in an ad and make that a central aspect, it's kind of a sign there's not much else to attack there. As party chairman, how do you kind of lead this party toward a better tone than what you had heard before?
Well, you know, the interesting thing that the tone of that race, which was only a month or so old at that point, it was already pretty nasty.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize, I mean, Schweik gave as good as he got.
Absolutely.
And I want to, I think in some ways that's gotten lost in this, and I mean this as a respect to him. Tom Schweik was prepared to run a pretty tough, aggressive campaign. I covered his kickoff.
Oh, yeah.
And he minced no words about his concerns about Hannaway's donations from Sinkfeld, what he felt was Koster's corruption. That's the exact word that he used.
Yeah.
He said, I think that Hannaway was bought and paid for by Rex
Correct.
Sinkfeld.
Yeah.
So the tone of that was...
My point being is that he was being assertive, like most candidates for governor tend to be pretty assertive.
Yes.
I want to make that clear.
But yeah, continue. I want to hear about what you're going to do.
So the difference, anytime you've got a two-way primary, or it's just two candidates, those tend to become extremely nasty because it's a family fight inside the family. We don't know yet what the ultimate field's going to look like on the Republican side for governor, but my sense is that it's going to be multi-candidate.
Yeah, and that could be another concern.
No, that's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing because if you've got a multi-candidate field out there, it fundamentally changes the whole tone and tenor of the dialogue that takes place. You'll have contrast advertising and so forth, but it's not going to get so personal when you've got three or four candidates in a field. When I ran in a four-way primary, when that thing was over, we were all friends, all of us. And but oftentimes in a two-way primary, and sometimes there may be a third or fourth candidate, but they're minor figures. And so when there's clearly two, That's when things get really nasty. You look at Carnahan Shamel. You look at Webster Blunt. Anytime you've had
Steelman-Holsoff.
Steelman-Holsoff. Anytime you have these two-way primaries, they get pretty
ugly. But before you ask your question, Joe, you expect like Senators Mike Parson and Mike Kehoe to possibly get into this race, along with Hanaway and Eric Greitens?
And you could see Lieutenant Governor Kinder hop in. I mean, it is a wide open environment right now. And from my position as a party chairman, I'm very encouraging to anybody that wants to step in.
Now, the dynamics in a multi-person primary when there's more than two is complicated. All you have to look is that the Iowa Democratic primary for president back in 2004, where Dick Gephardt and Howard Dean were engaging in this, they were basically behaving like they were the only two.
Yep.
And the result was that John Kerry ended up coming in.
Yep.
That's one of the examples that is used by candidates in multi-candidate primaries is how not to do it. Don't get focused too much on one of your opponents because then you're allowing a third or fourth person to come around.
If there's all these candidates and they all kind of spend all of their money during the primary and Chris Koster has raised $10 gazillion and
not then gets, yet. We don't know yet.
And then gets $30 million from the Democratic Governors Association, I mean, is the Republican candidate going to be at a disadvantage or are they going to get like $30 million from the Republican Governors Association?
Well, the presidential cycle does not contain a lot of gubernatorial elections across the country.
Missouri's one of the few.
And so we will be a focus. This race will be a focused race, targeted race by the Democrats and Republicans nationally. And I do think that we've got an excellent chance to beat Chris Koster with any of a number of candidates. And I think Chris Koster's record has not really been fully discussed.
That's Missouri GOP Chairman John Hancock talking with reporters Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum. To listen to more of the Politically Speaking podcast, visit our website at stlpublicradio.org. Tomorrow, join Steve Potter for Cityscape when he'll talk about Opera Theater of St. Louis's tasting events, pairing young singers with food and drink. We'll also hear from comedian Paula Poundstone and actor John Lithgow. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about spring gardening with experts from the Missouri Botanical Garden, so get your questions ready. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Erica Smith, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Katie Cook, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.